This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Making a case for Jumbo Tsuruta as the greatest wrestler ever. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of Making a Case. I'm your host, Stephen Graham. And on this week, I have my All Japan Excite buddy here, Parv. How are you doing?
I'm very good, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good. Good. A little tuckered out, but excited to do this show. I'm trying to get these out as quickly as possible, but it's been a couple weeks. So, you know, it's that time of year where it's pretty busy. But how are you?
Good, yeah. Well, I'm happy to actually definitely be submitting an entry after my little freak out a couple of months ago.
when you took your ball and went home.
I have devised a new system that I've called Big Lab. Have you seen this, Stephen?
Oh, gosh. Yes.
Now,
like, every time when I think I'm, like, the nerdiest person, Parv will come along and, like, one-up me. And I'm like, oh, okay. I feel a little bit better about myself.
Now, rather embarrassingly, using this system so far, Jumbo's coming out as third. So something's gone wrong with the machine. I need to try to tweak it a little bit because he needs to be number one. it's not all bad because Flair's coming out at one at the minute, but, you know, still.
Who's two?
Terry Funk.
Oh, okay. That's fair. Yeah. All right. Well, you can work on your algorithm a little bit.
Yep.
I just want to say this is the second episode, but this show probably wouldn't exist if you didn't do your little Flair manifesto, because this is kind of a takeoff on this, a little more condensed and such. But I like the general concept of people making a case for people, so thank you for that.
No worries.
Yeah, so let's...
Nice to have somebody thanking me for that bloody series, rather than...
hate you got. Yeah.
All right.
Wow.
But this is one of the misconceptions, though, because I put out that series and everybody just assumes that I'm making a case for Flair for number one. But in fact, if I had to make my list today without my weird algorithms and so on, my choice would probably be Jumbo Tsuruta, which is why I'm on this show.
Okay, well, that's pretty good lead in. What's your history with watching Jumbo?
Well, as you know, Stephen, pretty late to Japanese wrestling. I was a pretty strange fan in the early 2000s, in that I was one of those fans who wanted to reject the smart culture, as I've told you before. So I used to hang out like places like Wrestle Crap, and, you know, I was into like Sean Mooney and like rubbishy super tapes, Coliseum videos and so on. So I stubbornly like wouldn't watch Japanese wrestling for quite a long time. So I didn't actually get into Jumbo until I got Will's All Japan 80s DVD-R set, which was kind of my gateway into Japanese wrestling in general and into Jumbo Tsuruta. Since then, you know, I don't do things by halves. I've kind of gone full in on the deep end with Jumbo. And really the remarkable thing is that his stock has risen with me, Stephen, when I've been concentrating on other people. So, for example, I went into I did my deep dive on 70s guys, Dory Jr., Jack Briscoe, Billy Robinson, Terry Funk. You know, I've been really trying to explore everything that there is in the 70s footage wise. And the guy who's really come out, you know, shining out of all of that stuff has been, bizarrely, Jumbo. I mean, I wasn't looking for him, but he just crops up so many times. Likewise with our All Japan Excite series. Well, really, I went in there looking for Misawa and Kawada and Hansen and, you know, the All Japan guys. And like at the minute, who's coming out on top? It's Jumbo Tsuruta yet again. So yeah. It's just, I don't know, he's one of these people who it's almost like you can't avoid him, really. He's just, if you watch All Japan between 1972 and 1993, chances are Jumbo's going to be in the mix somewhere and being awesome, which is ultimately what we're going to be talking about.
Well, that's pretty good. So he was number one on the Smarks Choice poll. You feel he should be number one. Why do you feel he needs a case made for him?
Well, I mean, one of the things about Jumbo is that he is somebody who you can take for granted a little bit, I think. Not to the same extent as Flair, because I think Flair, you know, is still the de facto number one. He is the bar against which every other case is judged, right? Mm-hmm. But Jumbo also, I mean, because he was there for so long, and because he is almost kind of the... You can almost think sometimes that Jumbo's boring, maybe, as a pick. Do you know what I mean? Like even though Tenryu was around, you know, for a similar length of time, Tenryu seems like a more exciting person to pimp and to go for rather than a Jumbo who, I don't know, for whatever reason, he's just kind of like there a lot of the time, and that's probably why he needs championing a little bit, I would say.
Okay, that's fair. You know, we can get into Tenryu a little bit later, but he has this long stretch after Jumbo retires where he's still great for another, you know, 30 years. So so there is that. But yeah, we'll talk about longevity a little bit later. But for Jumbo, if you were like sum up like the main point in his favor, like the main argument, why should Jumbo be number one?
Well, it really comes down to his massive list of great matches, and I don't think anybody has a longer list. Even Flair, even Misawa, and all of those mid-90s All Japan guys, I don't think any of them have a list as long as Jumbo's. And this brings me on to my second point, which is I think a lot of people would start looking at Jumbo in the 80s, okay? And I think he's thought of as an 80s guy. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, you would generally think of him as an 80s guy.
Whereas really the journey with Jumbo should start in 1972, okay? He was an Olympian. He competed in the Munich Olympics, Greco-Roman. At the age of 21. And then, I mean, Barber wanted him to bring him to the pros. And within 2 months of becoming pro wrestler, he was challenging Dory Funk Jr. for the NWA heavyweight title. Which tells you a lot about Jumbo's career, because he started basically at the very, very top. He was challenging for the NWA world title basically in his debut match, you know, I mean, yeah. Like in, or in his second or his third pro match. And in fact, Dory has got a little bit where he says, as I entered the dressing room, you know, he heard Barber say, "Mr. Funk." And I turned and there he was, a tall, lean, Japanese kid wearing a crew cut. And I had to look up to him, even though he was slightly sumped over. And he said, "Mr. Funk, my name is Tommy Tsuruta. It is easier to say my Japanese name, Tsuruta Tomomi. I have never wrestled a professional match before in my life. This is my first time. Please take care of me." And according to Dory, he went on to become the best student of professional wrestling he ever had. He learned fast. In his first year of professional wrestling, Tsuruta became the top star in the United States, something accomplished by only a few Japanese wrestlers, including his boss. So they basically sent Jumbo over to Amarillo. And really, so I wouldn't include 72 itself. We don't have a huge amount of footage from that time. But once you get to 1973 and he gets back to Japan, honestly, from that point until the minute he gets ill, which is where we've stopped watching him, Stephen, in, what, 1993? 92?
Yeah, I think it's the end of 92, and then in 93, he just kind of disappears for a bit.
Yeah, so literally, from 1973 to 1992, he was essentially the man in that promotion. And, I mean, the list of opponents is unreal. Just in the 70s alone, okay, he faced, well, we've heard Dory Funk Jr., Jack Briscoe, Terry Funk, Harley Race, and then, of course, he faced Ric Flair in the early 80s. All five NWA champions during that era. I don't know of many other guys who actually did that, who faced them all. And not only did he face them all, he had great matches with each and every single one of them. I would say he has a 4-star-plus match with all five of those guys. And that's just the NWA champs. There's also Billy Robinson, who I think he has at least 2-star matches with, 2 5-star matches with. There's Giant Barber himself, who he has a great match with in 1975. There's Rusuka Kimura, who he has a great match with in 1976. There's Nick Bockwinkel, who he has a very good match with in Hawaii in 1979. So just his seven, like, if Jumbo had retired in 1980, he's already got a case that would probably get him into a top 50 wrestlers list, I would argue. And we haven't even got to the stuff that for which he's most famous, which I would argue is his 80s run. So,
well, that's a pretty good point in his favor there.
So this is one of the things that I don't think people but the point is that the 70s stuff tends to be skipped over a little bit quickly. But it's not like that. It's not like, so, I don't know, like, we've got an idea that Ric Flair was great in 1978 and 79. For example, in Mid-Atlantic, we've got some garbage tape footage. But we really don't have, like, the matches, the footage there. But for Jumbo, because, I mean, this is a virtue of working for a company that, you know, held on to its footage and, you know, preserved its tapes and so on, we have all of these matches, which is pretty rare from a guy from this era, but they're all really good matches too. So there we go.
That's pretty good. What other, so he's had a lot of great matches. So if you're someone who's completely compelled by a great match theory, you know, there you go. You can go with Jumbo. But what else do you got on Jumbo for him? Like, what does he do well? Like, what makes Jumbo a great wrestler besides having good matches? What makes the matches great?
Okay. Well, I can go through each. You know, I have my big lav thing. That is base ability, intangibles, great matches, length of peak, ability to work different styles and roles, and variety of different opponents and memorable feuds. So I can kind of go into each of those if you want.
Yeah, why not? Let's start at the start there. Okay. What was that first one?
It's basically his base ability in the ring. Like, what does he actually do as a worker in matches?
Okay.
And I rate that out of offense, selling, psychology, and then sometimes I give a bonus point if they do something extra specially brilliantly, okay? Now, for Jumbo, I think his offense is fantastic. I even give him a bonus point for hitting every single move as if it's a finisher, as we've talked about. I think his career spans, 20 years, basically. You'll see a slightly different style of offense in the 70s, into the 80s and 90s. I think he picks up the pace a little bit in 1985. But I think if you were to pick up a stereotypical idea of what you have of 70s wrestling, what are you thinking? Like, if I said to you, Stephen, what is 70s wrestling like? What are you picturing?
I'm picturing Dory Funk Jr. on the mat.
Yeah, so you think of it as being slower. You think of it being mat-based and so on. Mm-hmm. That is not actually the case when it comes to all these matches. So I'm guessing there are some people listening who might be thinking, yeah, Paul, but come on, I'm not going to sit down and watch all these Jumbo matches in the 70s. I don't want to be bored to tears. It honestly isn't guys sitting on the mat. So in the 1970s, what you imagine is, when I say to you, you know, watch all of these different matches against Dory and Briscoe and Terry Funk and all of these different people, you imagine it's guys laying around on the mat and, you know, long, boring kind of headlock sequences and so on. Now, you know me, Stephen. I am not a guy who's big on that stuff, right? I'm not a mat work lover. I think it's fair to say. Would you agree?
I would think that, but then there is when, like, you do that too. You're a confusing beast, I would think. But yes, I think too much mat work is you need excitement, that's for sure. Okay, we'll go with that.
So I guess my point is I would not be high on all of these matches from the 70s if they weren't throwing bombs, picking up the pace. You know, you will see suplex variations. You will see them building towards an exciting, fast-paced finish. All the way back in 1975. I mean, I actually think All Japan had this built into the style back in the 70s. Like, those Billy Robinson matches with Jumbo are as hard-hitting and as fast-paced as anything you'll get in 85, I would say. You know, I really believe that. So I wouldn't sleep on the 70s stuff just because it's 70s. It really is, like, phenomenal work. If you're a guy who's kind of put off by the idea of the 70s being slow or boring, really those guys were state-of-the-art workers, and they were, you know, really putting it all out there. Even boring old Dory, would, you know, throws his fair share of suplexes and big bombs, and he's bumping all around the place. It was a hard-hitting style, even in the 70s. So that's one thing I wanted to say. Getting back to Jumbo as a worker, he is really good on offense, I think, because of the impact and the intensity with which he hits moves. He's very good at, he's a great bomb thrower, probably one of the best ever to have been, I would argue. Would you agree with that, Stephen? Just from your, you know, who else would you put even in that conversation of guys who are just tremendous at making like a body slam look like a deadly maneuver?
Well, you know, the one guy I have number one, Stan Hansen, is pretty damn great at that. Everything he looks like is just death. I know Jumbo has that in the 90s. The 70s and 80s, I think he has bits and pieces of it, but it's not quite as vicious. But I think Hansen has that for a lot longer. He's one guy I can think of.
So, I mean, you mentioned Stan Hansen there. Another thing I wanted to mention about Jumbo is his size, because I do think it plays into the type of worker that he is. Jumbo's bigger than your average Japanese guy. Would you agree with that? He's kind of...
His name's Jumbo.
I mean, he's kind of what, like 6'4", maybe? Like, he's not quite 300 pounds, but I can imagine he's up in like the... You know, he's about 280, something like that, I'd imagine. I mean, he's almost as big as Hansen, I would argue. Like, I mean, you could see Jumbo going toe-to-toe with the Stan Hansen. And that plays into some of his strikes. So when he needs to get stiff, he can get stiff. And this is one of the things with him. Because he had that, because he came in and faced all of those very many different... Like, I mean, basically, for his first 5 years, he was basically facing the world's best workers. So his training as a wrestler was essentially facing all of these brilliant people week in, week out on our various different All Japan tours, okay? And so that meant that he's able to kind of... So if he needs to go into a slugfest, for example, he can do it. If somebody wants to get into a bomb-throwing contest with Jumbo, he can do it. If somebody wants to take it to the mat with Jumbo, he can do it. He may not be the best ever at mat work or at, you know, throwing punches or whatever, but he can certainly hang in any of those different contexts. So that's why I've given him a 3 out of 3 for his offense. For his selling, he's also a 3 out of 3 for me. You know, for a big man, he bumps around like crazy. If he needs to get an opponent over, he will. If he needs to do long-term selling, he can do that. He's good at registering pain on his face. He's pretty expressive. So I don't really see how he could drop any points on the selling front. And then on the psychology front, well, I mean, look at his list of matches. How can somebody not have top psychology if they've got a list of matches basically longer than anybody else's? Like, and I don't know, you think of the Tenryu match from 1989 or the Flair match or even any of those late matches with Misawa or that Billy Robinson match I mentioned. I mean, the psychology is off the charts for all of them. So, well, he's a part of that match. So you have to reason, well, the guy has got great psychology.
That's true. Let's look at some of the criticisms of Jumbo. Here's one. You might have some examples. You've watched a great amount of Jumbo's career, but has Jumbo's had a lot of great matches against a lot of great opponents. Has he had any really great matches against not great opponents?
So has he had matches against not great opponents? Well, I mean, it depends on whether you think Kimura is great. That is a really good match, I would say, from 76. And it also depends on what you're asking for.
Can he carry subpar workers to great matches? Like, Flair has had great matches with a lot of shitty guys. Bret Hart's had a lot of great matches with a lot of shitty guys. Does Jumbo have that ability?
Well, I mean, he's got a very, very good match with Kerry Von Erich.
Kerry Von Erich in the 80s was pretty damn good.
But Kerry Von Erich is very, very carryable, I would say. I don't know. Like, that's probably a fair point. But, I mean, just as I told you, he is a guy who was facing the NWA champion his first match ever. So he basically had his entire career working against world-class people. He does have matches against lower caliber opponents, but none of them are kind of like his big ticket items. His classics are all against guys who are pretty good. I mean, it depends on what your definition of a great match is. 4 stars, is that a great match?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, lots of people think Dory Funk Jr. is shitty. He had a good match. He had a great match with him in 1975. So, am I cheating?
yeah. Guess it depends who you talk to. I guess also All Japan didn't put him in big singles matches against not really good workers often.
And this actually plays into another.
Does he have bad match? Like, is there recorded bad matches against, subpar opponents or, like, even very good opponents?
Well, I mean, this is a very similar thing to something you could bring up against Stan Hansen. And in fact, I saw somebody on the board say this about Stan Hansen recently, which, in fact, I think it was our friend Matt D, which was like, well, yeah, but basically a lot of the time he's just kicking people's ass. And the way All Japan works, as you well know, Stephen, if it's Jumbo versus a guy, it's going to be Jumbo taking that guy's head off. You know, it's not going to be like a fair match. It's going to be essentially a squash because that's how Barber booked, right? Like, if you're at the top of that hierarchy, you're not going to get an even-sided contest. It's just going to be Jumbo kicking the shit out of someone.
That actually leads into a point here. I had found Dave Meltzer wrote quite the rant against Jumbo on Wrestling Classics years ago. A lot of it is a lot of the talent saying that he didn't really work hard when the TV wasn't on, or if he didn't think his opponent was good, he didn't want to put in the effort. There's that kind of stuff. That's hard. Like, if there's no TV, what do we know? I'm not going to take someone's word on it, so we can't really go on that. But there is two paragraphs here that I think are relevant. I'll stop after the first one and let you comment, then we'll move on to the other one, which I think hits home a point pretty well. But this first one is, in the early 90s, when I thought Jumbo was the best guy in the business, Foley came back from a tour and saw me at a Reza convention. He went up to me and was vehement about disagreeing about being there for a month. He said that when he worked singles with Jumbo, Jumbo only wanted to do 3 moves, didn't want to give him anything, and only wanted to do 5 to 6 minutes. And that was a TV match. He couldn't see how I would rate a guy like that top 3 in the world.
And that was Mick Foley saying that, was it?
Yeah.
So what you're saying to me is that in the early 90s, Mick Foley, recent WCW jobber, is complaining that Jumbo Tsuruta, 20-year veteran and legend, wouldn't give him some time in a match. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay.
What I will say though, is that there are guys who don't rate Jumbo highly. Like Ric Flair, for example, has never had a kind word to say about him on his podcast to date. He always puts Jumbo down. Terry Funk, in his book, didn't really put Jumbo over. Didn't say... He actually said that he thought... I can't remember who he said now. But he said that he thought some other guy was a much better wrestler than Jumbo Tsuruta.
Profit, Furnace, Tom Zink, Foley are also guys that are very cold on him.
So, like, he's not... he's not a guy that is that kind of gets universally praised by his peers, and that so with a, and as we know with a guy like Meltzer that goes a long way. But then my argument would be, well, look at Meltzer on Lex Luger for all those years, or look at the like we have never as a our little community, our little PWO community, taken things like that as an argument. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
who cares what the boy's made of him? Doesn't make any difference. And like, and also for every single one person like that, like a Flair or a Foley or a whoever who's got a knock on Jumbo, you will find somebody also putting him over huge. Like, I mean, Dory thinks he's the best person he ever trained. Ted DiBiase thinks he's a great wrestler. I mean, we don't have quotes from the Japanese guys. Because, I don't know, we don't tend to get that sort of stuff. Rick Martel thinks he was a great worker, for example. So, you know, like, it's six of one, half a dozen the other. But ultimately, no matter what any of them say, it doesn't really matter. Because we judge on watching the footage and not on hearsay or what the boys think.
Yeah, that's a fair argument there. This other paragraph, though, I thought was the most interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go through it. In late 1984 in Nagano, they ran the big angle where Chosu and company arrived to set up Chosu versus Jumbo as the big money program for 1985. Mm-hmm. The decision was made by Baba after the tour and after seeing Chosu's army work a few live matches that there would be a problem. Baba changed his mind on the original angle, feeling that a new style that they imported was much faster paced and Jumbo wasn't going to adapt. He also saw that the guys they imported working their asses off every night and that we would create problems for non-TV nights. He took Jumbo out of the key position in the program and put Tenryu in. Tenryu, while not as talented, would and did adapt. If there was nothing to his reputation of being lazy, then Baba himself, who knew Jumbo better than anyone, was also guilty of being fooled. So basically, Baba thought that Jumbo working a program with the Chosu guys would expose Jumbo too much, so they put Tenryu in there. So, Baba, you know, longtime friend, booker, you know, owner, what do you think of his kind of move there? Or is there any thing to that?
Well, I just say watch the matches. I mean, my main response to that would just be watch that feud. And tell me if Jumbo was struggling to keep pace with Yatsu and Choshu. Because I don't think he did at all. I mean, he carries his end in all of those matches. I do think the Jumbo-Choshu singles matches are a little bit disappointing. But ultimately, what does it matter? Because Jumbo did adapt. He did pick up the pace. And arguably, is much more exciting a wrestler in 1987 than he is in 1984. So... it doesn't really tally with my experience of watching the stuff. Okay, maybe Barber had doubts about whether Jumbo could adapt, but he did adapt, didn't he? I mean, he adapted to the point where he could work, you know, he could work matches with Misawa and Kawada and so on in the 90s even. So I think he was proven wrong by his own protege. Barber shouldn't have doubted him.
I like the idea of Baba doubting someone, just like wagging his giant finger at him or something. But you brought up Misawa, so I'd like to some people think that Misawa and Jumbo are kind of the two, well, they were clearly the two best aces in all Japan. But you know, you're making your list. How do you see them as a comparison? Because being an ace, you know, is a big part of Jumbo's candidacy. So how do you compare him to Misawa in that role?
Well, I mean, so it really depends on when you take the start of Jumbo's aceness from, okay? Let's just pretend for the sake of this argument it's 1980. So you've got Jumbo's 80s versus Misawa's 90s, okay? And maybe you can do a pound-for-pound comparison, and possibly Misawa's list of matches is slightly longer than Jumbo's from the 90s versus his 80s. But if you include Jumbo's 90s stuff and you include his 70s stuff, I think, I mean, clearly, Jumbo in the 70s is better than Misawa as Tiger Mask 2, whichever way you look at it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's probably a fair thing.
and I think Jumbo was in a more important position, younger and for longer. So, I mean, it's kind of difficult because it was kind of like Giant Baba was the 1A, Jumbo was the 1B, okay? And I know I sound like I keep on bringing up the 70s stuff quite a lot, but it is a massive part, in my mind, it's a massive part of his candidacy because of his, I mean, I've just got a list here of all the matches I've ever given 4 stars and above to Jumbo, and I would say at least a third of them come from the 70s. So, yes. In terms of just them as aces, I think that Jumbo, I mean, I don't know. You've seen the 80s All Japan set, right, Stephen? You watched all of that?
Not all of it. Bits and pieces, really.
Well, I mean, my experience watching it chronologically is that Jumbo doesn't really start to feel like the man, big capital letters, until about 85, 86, 87. By 88, 89, 91, when he transitions to that kind of grumpy Jumbo character that most people are very, very high on. He really does feel like, you know, this is the man to beat type thing. And I don't know, I think he's got kind of an aura about him to an extent. Misawa is a more stoical character, as well. I mean, we've been watching him on the All Japan Excited series. He's kind of, I've said this before, there's a kind of, like, I guess a coldness about Misawa that is a little bit inaccessible, maybe, to people who aren't, you know, Japanese and don't kind of get that whole idea of the stoical hero. I actually think Misawa's probably more stoical than Jumbo and more Japanese, if that makes any sense. I actually think that Jumbo is a more American-style worker than people think of a lot of the time. I mean, it sounds ridiculous because he spent most of his career in Japan, but he got over in the States when he worked there. And of course, he was the AWA champion for a little spell. Not saying that AWA fans knew he was, but like he did go over there and worked Martel in St. Paul or whatever. And, you know, he was trained by the Funks. And if you actually think about what Jumbo does, he's basically an American-style worker. So I don't know. I think that Jumbo's more expressive as a worker than Misawa is. Misawa is more, I'm not going to show my emotions. I'm going to keep a kind of, I don't know what you'd call it. In Britain, we'd say a stiff upper lip, but
yeah,
it's like the Japanese version of a stiff upper lip, I guess. So I actually think that for somebody who's not into either of them, that I think they'd find it easier to get into Jumbo quicker than they'd find it easier to get into Misawa quicker.
Yeah.
That's just my quote. Because I actually reckon that somebody who's brand new to that stuff would probably find it easier to get into somebody like a Kawada or even a Kobashi. They're more accessible.
Yeah. Misawa's, he's a different character altogether. But I want to go into another comparison because I think for you to make your case, I think this will do the best job of it. Because we all know you and Flair, your kind of fanboyish attitude towards him. But you are saying that Jumbo is better. And why do you think Jumbo is better than Flair? And I think if you could convince yourself of that, that will go a long way for the listeners.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, you're a little bit naughty, Stephen, calling me a fanboy. I don't know if I'm a fanboy. I just think that if you objectively study what information there is, that Flair's kind of got so many different matches up against so many different guys, that you know, you kind of have to give the guy his due, even if you're not a fanboy, as you call it. Like, I don't know, I'd imagine he'd be hitting most people's top five or top 10 at the very least. With Jumbo, he is one of the very few guys who has the list of matches as long as Flair's. So that's one criteria. And in fact, if I listed it all out, which I have done, I actually think Jumbo's list of matches at the very high end, at the 5-star and the 4¾ end, is actually bigger than Flair's list of matches in that category. In fact, I think there were more Jumbo matches in my top 100 than Flair matches. So that's one thing. So he kind of wins on the great match theory kind of area. But another big criteria, if you remember, and this is why I've got Flair above Misawa, say, like, I think if you listed all of Misawa's great matches, well, Misawa is probably got a list as long as Flair's, if not longer.
Yeah,
probably. Like, they'd certainly be comparable. But my main knock on Misawa is that, well, how many of those matches are against Kawada? How many of those matches are against Tawe and Kobashi? If Ric Flair was facing Ricky Steamboat every single night for 10 years, can you imagine how long the list of great matches would be? It would be massive. But he wasn't facing Ricky Steamboat. He was facing Lex Luger and Ron Garvin and all these other guys who are good wrestlers in their own right, but like Ron Garvin isn't Kobashi, is he? So that was, I mean, that's an argument I made on the old Flair series. For Jumbo, he does have the very, very wide variety of different opponents. Okay. If I just had to list them out, you know, he's got a match against Flair, Tenryu, Choshu, Yatsu, Misawa. These are all guys he's had 5-star matches with in singles or tags. Dory and Terry Funk, Kerry Von Erich, Stan Hansen, who else? Harley Race, Steve Williams and Terry Gordy, Dick Slater, Nick Bockwinkel, Ted DiBiase. These are all guys he's had 4-star and above matches with. It's a much, much longer list than the Misawa list is in terms of number of different opponents, and that is one of my big criteria. So Jumbo is one of the very few guys who can match Flair, not only for the length of, like, the quantity of matches, but also for the sheer variety of different opponents. Now, you could say it's a knock, and I'm actually glad you brought it up as a criticism that, or it basically happens that all of Jumbo's big matches are against world-class opposition, which is fine, but we're talking the greatest wrestler ever here. So, like, to me, it doesn't... I mean, this is an argument I had with Will. I don't really care if Jerry Lawler was having decent matches with scrubs. I want world-class matches with world-class wrestlers. You know, it doesn't really matter. Like, he is at the very top of the game, so he's going to be having matches against the very, very top people. And that's what I'm looking for in the greatest ever. So, Kikuchi's another one.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Moving on, I think the other criticism that gets bandied about is that Jumbo pre-late 80s, some people tend to have the tendency that to feel that he's a little bit boring or like missing, you know, he's missing some pizzazz or something. He definitely has it later in his career, but the big majority of his career, he seems to be a little bit boring. Do you see that in any way as a criticism?
I actually do. I will concede something, okay? And that is, so, and this is a kind of careful distinction I want to make. Up until about 1980, Jumbo is a lighter worker. I think he puts on a bit of weight in the 80s. He becomes, so if you actually look at him in the 70s, he's never a lightweight, obviously, but he is not as kind of chunky as he would become. Okay, he's leaner and he's more kind of agile and explosive as a worker. So in those matches, I mean, I would actually watch the Billy Robinson matches first if you've never seen 70s Jumbo, and then if you don't want to see more after that, give up, because like, if you don't like Jumbo versus Robinson, like, you won't like any of the stuff, okay? If you watch those matches, you'll see he's very feisty. He's like a spunky, exciting babyface, okay? Fiery, explosive, like, he's got the crowd behind him. He's kind of got, like, I'd actually compare him a little bit to old, to Kobashi when he's young, you know? Plucky, he's not going to give up, he's got a lot of that fighting spirit. Then when he, like, so by about 1980, Barber starts to slow down a little bit. And even though Jumbo is like the 1B to Barber's 1A during the 70s, if I was to make a comparison, I'd say like he's not quite like the world champ. He's more like kind of a very strong intercontinental champion then. Like think, this is an awful analogy. I can't believe I'm making it, but think of like the time when Hulk Hogan was the world champion and Ultimate Warrior was the IC champ, right? Mm-hmm. Like Jumbo was the Ultimate Warrior, basically. Like just before his title run for most of those 70s, okay? He's kind of like IC level, like the sorts of like belts he was holding were... It's not quite the top belt. It's like the next one down. But then when Barber starts to slow down, Jumbo transitions into becoming the ace. And I do think in the early 80s, he slows down his style a little bit. He's working slightly longer matches. You get a bit more on the mat. So there is a slowing down, I would say, from about 81 to about 84. And if you look at your typical All Japan card during that time, honestly, the exciting stuff is probably like Terry Funk versus Stan Hansen or, you know, an Abby match or something like that. Like, usually the Jumbo match feels a little bit stodgy, if that makes any sense. So I can see people being low on that particular period. He's just a bit stodgy during that time. And if he had a time during his peak where I would say, well, you know, that's not my favorite period. But even within that, he had good matches with Flair. I mean, one 5-star match with Flair. Another one, which I have at 4 stars. He had a very good match with Nick Bockwinkel. He had a number of good matches with Rick Martel. And this is all during the period when I'm saying that he was probably at his worst.
Well, you know, those are, you know, three of the greatest wrestlers ever, too.
So, like, no matter, like, even if you say he's in a bit of a boring, like, yeah, that match with Kerry Von Erich during that time, you know? So, even though I'm saying a bit of a period where he's not quite as exciting as in other parts of his career, it's not like he was having terrible matches during that time. I mean, I know there are some people like Phil Schneider calls him the Terry Taylor. I mean, I don't understand that at all. I cannot. That is bonkers in my mind to call Jumbo Terry Taylor. I also think it's a mistake to think that he was like that throughout the 70s. And even into 1980, because he wasn't. He's a much more exciting worker before about 81, I would say. Yes. Okay. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of Dylan's old shows recently, and he's a guy who seems to have a real blind spot with Jumbo.
He hates him.
And he has a visceral hatred of Jumbo. And I get that. You know, I have a visceral I hate Shawn Michaels. To an unreasonable level that I can see is blinkered and wrong, okay? And even I can admit that Shawn Michaels probably is a great wrestler, in so much as he's had, and even in Dylan's top 50 wrestlers of all time, he ranked Jumbo at 19, and that's a guy who hates him. So, you know, I'm just saying, if you don't hate him, he should probably be looking like 1, 2, or 3, I'd imagine, like. I don't see anybody else who has a list this long, this varied, and actually this range of different opponents over a prolonged period of time. So, yeah.
Pretty good. So I think we're at the point here where you should tell us what the essential Jumbo matches we should watch are.
Okay. Well, I mean, there are a number of different series I would point to. In the 70s, like I said, I'd point to that Billy Robinson match. He actually has a couple of different ones with Billy Robinson. I think they're both phenomenal. A lot of people really like the Terry Funk match from 1976. Now, I went a little bit lower than a lot of people on that match. But it's still definitely worth seeking out. He has one with Harley Race in 1977 that I would take a look at. But really, my favorite series from the 70s is the series that him and Jeff Barber have with the Funks. I honestly think they are master. Like, there's a match from 1975. It's March the 13th, 75. Giant Barber and Jumbo versus the Funks, which is as good as a tag match that you'll see in the 1970s. And in fact, that's something else that I should have said, Stephen, that he's not only a great singles wrestler, but he's really good in tag settings. Even though you'd never think of Jumbo as a tag wrestler, I would put him in there, in terms of great match theory at least, as one of the greatest tag guys, because there's so many of them.
That's true.
In the 80s, I mean, I mentioned quite a few of them. The go-to match would be 6-5-89 against Tenryu. That's a brilliant, like, that's a contender for greatest match of all time, I would argue. Another contender for greatest match of all time would be Jumbo and Tenryu versus Riki Choshu and Yatsu from 12-28-86. Honestly, when I watched that match, I was marking out like a madman the first time I watched that. Just one of the greatest tag matches you'll ever see. I really like that Kerry match that I mentioned from 5-22-84. So I would probably pick those three out to watch from the 80s. I would actually leave the Flair one until you're kind of deep in, because I gotta be honest, it's a bit, like, it's an hour long draw. Yeah. And if I'm trying to sell someone on Jumbo, I don't want to start with like the really, really exciting stuff first, you know. And in the 90s, he has a great match with Misawa, 9-1-90, which we reviewed on the All Japan Excite series. And honestly, the six-man tag, Stephen, 4-20-91. It's a Jumbo, Tawe, and Fuchi against Misawa, Kawada, and Kobashi. If you want to see Jumbo as a grizzled, like, grumpy bastard, that is the match. Like, that is like the arc. That is the kind of, that's the match I'd go to kind of showcase Jumpy Grumbo. Grumpy Jumbo. You know, him and Tawe just like decimating the leg with a chair and.
Oh yeah.
Great stuff. Those are the ones I'd pick out. The Giant Barber Funk series from the '70s, the Tenryu stuff, and the Choshu stuff from the '80s. And Misawa's kind of crew versus Jumbo's crew from the 90s would be my three go-to feuds.
That's pretty good. So, your closing remarks, what's your kind of final statement here on Jumbo?
Well, honestly, I just think that if you're thinking about ranking, you know, different guys in your greatest wrestler ever list, if you think about, I mean, if great matches mean anything to you, I think Jumbo has to be in the conversation. If you haven't seen a lot of these matches I'm talking about, I would strongly encourage you to go out of your way to watch them and to seek out more. And that is the thing with Jumbo, is that you keep on watching, and then he's got more, and then he's got more, and then he's got more, and then he's got more. And there aren't that many guys who have that. Flair's got it. Like, I mean, I'm one of the biggest Flair fans around. I haven't seen all of Ric Flair's matches. I haven't seen all of Jumbo. I mean, there are still Jumbo matches from the 70s and 80s that I haven't watched. So, you know, and they could be really good for all I know. But these are just the ones that I have watched, you know. So there's that. I would say, if longevity means anything to you, well, he has a 19-year a 19-year career where he's legitimately kind of a contender for top 10 in the world, if not top 5 in the world. Literally every, I would actually say he's in the conversation every single year from 73 to 92. I actually think that if you were like, who is the best worker in the world in 1975? Jumbo's in the conversation. 1985, Jumbo's in the conversation. And 92, Jumbo has to be in the conversation. So there's that. I don't know who else has that. I mean,
I'll give you one. Negro Casas, who in the late 80s till even like last year, you could say that for, which is pretty insane too.
Yeah, no, I am just about to start really exploring Casas myself. So, and I'm really looking forward to it because he's somebody who I've loved every time I've seen him. So I wouldn't argue against, I mean, if that's genuinely the case, he's somebody else that, I mean, I'm considering him because people are saying that. I'm just saying that if you're the sort of person who puts stock in that, Jumbo has to be somebody that you think about. And I mean, like when you compare across to somebody like a Terry Funk, now you think Terry Funk's been around for an awful long time, but how many years during that stretch where Terry Funk was a significant worker, could you say that he was genuinely in the conversation for best worker in the world? Well, yeah, you could say it for 1976 for sure. You could say it for 1980 for sure. You could say it for 1983 for sure. And for 1989, you could say it for sure. But what about all those other years in between?
I think there's a footage issue with Funk, which kind of hampers him.
Well, it's not just a footage issue. It's the fact that he just goes back to the ranch and chills out for 6 months of the year.
I kind of like that. I'm a big Morocco fan, so I'll give someone credit for getting their career a little bit longer by taking some breaks. That's not going to hurt someone in my book.
But I'm just saying that you can't, like, for that very reason, you can't, or like, I don't know, Ricky Steamboat, you know, he's gone back to chill out with his wife for a year or whatever. You can't give Steamboat, I don't know, 87, and you can give him 89, but what's he doing in 1988? Nothing. You know, or like he had injury, like, as far as I know, Jumbo was never out for any significant period of time with injuries. And in fact, it also goes down to the way they worked, because they worked tours in All Japan, of course, didn't they?
Yeah.
So a lot of the matches you have are from the same sorts of times, and they do chill out for however many months of the year when they're not on tour. So, what else was there? So there was the matches, there was the variety of different opponents as well. I think he's really going to hang his hat on those three things. I think you can probably find workers who are as talented in the ring as Jumbo. You know, my base ability statistic, there's plenty of people I'd also rate at 9 or 10 out of 10. You know, like your favorite, Steven, Bret Hart, is a great wrestler. It's just he didn't have this career, you know. So it's a very similar argument to my argument for Ric Flair. And you could say, well, Jumbo was lucky. Barber picked him. But the fact is, he did. He picked Jumbo. He didn't pick Tenryu. He didn't pick any of these other guys. Jumbo was the man. So, you know, that's basically what it boils down to. I mean, who else ever had 4-star-plus matches with 5 different NWA champions? And then went on to have the career that he did after that.
Yeah, that's a pretty compelling argument. We'll see if it swayed anyone. Here's hoping. But do you have anything you would like to plug, Parv?
No, not really. I think we have a Titans of Wrestling forthcoming. And that is a bit of an event these days, like once every quarter these days. So look out for Titans of Wrestling. I'd like to plug the project, Steven, the greatest wrestler ever. But I'm starting to really look forward to it as we get closer to.
Oh, good. You had a negative month a little while ago, so that's good to hear.
Well, the main thing that's changed, Steven, is that I no longer care. I do care, obviously, but I no longer care about other people's lists. I only care about getting my own as close to what I want it to be as possible, and then I'm interested to see like what other people value in their wrestling.
Yeah, because some people do value that longevity and great matches, while other people like you were saying, Bret Hart's quality in the ring, and you know, it might be the quality in the ring that's all that matters. So we'll see what other people think. So it'll be interesting, and we'll definitely have more people on this show, and they might be making completely different arguments for completely different people, but that's for a later time. Thank you, Parv, and thank you, listeners, and we'll be back with another show in the future.